Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Will the Circle Be Unbroken, written by Ada Habersham and Charles Gabriel, and arranged by John Harbison, with a performance by the Atlanta Chamber Players. Our show this week focuses on a major event that will take place at Temple University from April 4th through the 6th. The event features world and Philadelphia premieres of music by John Harbison, as interpreted by artists and composers, pianist Uri Kane, composers James Primosh and Anna Wiesner, trumpeter Terrell Stafford, saxophonist Bobby Zankel, and guests Joanne Davis soprano and Julia Bentley mezzo soprano. The event is being presented by the award-winning Chamber Ensemble Network for New Music, which is dedicated to performing and commissioning music by living composers. Composer pianist James Primosh is on the faculty of University of Pennsylvania. His music reflects an affection for jazz and his love of sacred music as well as contemporary classical music. Mentors include George Crumb, Richard Wernick, and Mario Davidovsky. And we welcome you, James, here to Crossover.
Thank you, Jill.
You're a composer, and you're going to be involved in this Network for New Music extravaganza, I guess. just tell us a little bit about it and how you're approaching your role with this.
I have two roles to play in this concert. I've been asked to write a piece, one of several composers who are writing pieces for this program. The pieces are inspired by folk songs that our guest composer, John Harbison, employed in one of his own compositions.
And would you tell the audience about John Harbison to begin with?
Right. John is the guest of Network for New Music for several concerts and events that are going to be happening. His music will be played. He'll be doing some workshops, visiting schools. John is one of America's really most distinguished composers of concert music, and it's a real treat for us to have him here in Philadelphia.
So this is again a Network for New Music, and it's several events that are taking place. But tell us a little bit about you and how you're approaching it, and what is the project, basically?
Well, Network asked us to write pieces based on American folk songs that John had used in one of his own pieces. So it would sort of give another light on some of the same material. I chose to use Amazing Grace, and I used it in a piece for trumpet, double bass, and piano. When I said I play a couple of roles in this program, I'm going to be playing piano in my own piece. So I'm there as composer as well as pianist.
Well, that should be fun.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a pleasure, and they're wonderful musicians. I'm working with Terrell Stafford and Mary Javian are wonderful players, and we've had our first rehearsal, and it's going to be great.
Well, is it going to be pretty much an improvised session? Is that the way you do it when you're doing jazz?
This is actually, it's a notated piece. It's fully written out.
Okay.
But it has a jazz flavor. And Terrell is a fantastic jazz trumpeter. I mean, he can, he can play anything.
Sure.
in either jazz or classical style. It's great to hear how he brings a jazz inflection and nuance to this fully notated piece.
Well, of course, that was a conversation I think I always seem to have. I spoke to Uri Kane about it. And I mean, people think jazz, or you sit down and you're inspired and you just play. Well, of course, it doesn't work that way. It's very thought out, and I think it's very constructed as well. We've just heard John Harbison's arrangement of the Christian hymn Amazing Grace, performed by the Atlanta Chamber Players. Again, you already had a piece that was written that
right.
you improvised on. I mean, you were starting with Amazing Grace to begin with.
Right. That's the source. So my piece is sort of a variation on that tune. I think the listeners will be able to follow the tune in the setting I've given it, but I've embellished it and harmonized it, hopefully in a fresh way.
Mm-hmm.
It will have the feel of an improvisation, but like I said, it's all written out. The line is, you know, sometimes a little blurry. There's more undefined in classical performance than sometimes people think, and there's more predefined in jazz than people might think.
Yes, I think that, you know, I'm not saying this in a condescending way, but a lot of times people just say, well, you have to be inspired. You just sit down and you play. Well, that doesn't work at all. Certainly doesn't work in classical, and it doesn't work in jazz either, because I think jazz is very, very thought out.
Well, there's a tremendous discipline. There's a tradition. You know, you have to be very familiar with your materials as well as being a fluent instrumentalist or singer.
Right. So here you're taking Amazing Grace, which everyone knows, and you can do all kinds of improvisation on it, in a jazz idiom, is that right?
It's in a jazz, let me put it this way, in a jazz-flavored idiom.
That's safe.
It'll have a jazz feel to it, but I mean,
well, it does anyway, believe it or not. I mean, you can sing it in the gospel way, Amazing Grace, and it's very jazzy.
Sure.
And a wonderful piece of music anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Glorious.
Really beloved.
And glorious. The progression, the way it moves, it's really a marvelous work. So you are gilding the lily or something here?
Well, I'll tell you one little kind of slightly technical thing I'm doing. Amazing Grace, as we all know it, is in a major key.
Ah,
and I thought,
okay,
what can I do to cast a different light on this?
Put it in the minor key, huh?
Exactly. Exactly. So it's Amazing Grace in minor, which really puts a little darker.
I was going to say, yeah. Well, minor does that. Minor does that.
Right. So there's harmonic possibilities in minor that wouldn't have come across in major. Like I said, I think you'll still recognize the tune, but the harmonization will be, you know, something a little different, a little unfamiliar. It still has that soulful feeling. I think it works well in minor, actually. You'll think, you know, it won't sound artificial. It could well have been, you know, a folk hymn originally in a minor key.
It's a very moving melody. It grows and it mounts and it becomes large and overwhelming. You picked. It's amazing.
Well, let's hope that it's also graceful.
Okay. So, now tell us again. What are you doing? Also, Jim, you teach as well.
That's right. I'm a composer based here in Philadelphia. I'm on the faculty at University of Pennsylvania, And my main thing, although I'll be playing piano, my main thing is my work as a composer for a variety of media, vocal works, instrumental, a little electronic music.
Yes, tell us a little
works.
Yeah, about that. Electronics, a whole new one.
Well, I haven't done that much real recently, but I do hope to explore electronic music a little, get back to it a little more in the future. I've done a number of pieces where I combined electronics with live instruments.
Okay.
Now, the piece that's coming up is strictly, you know, acoustic instruments, just trumpet, bass, and piano, no electronics this time.
Here now, I Never Knew, music by James Primosh, performed by the Prism Sax Quartet. We've just heard I Never Knew, music by James Primosh, performed by the Prism Saxophone Quartet. Okay, so tell us about Network for New Music and how you're involved, other than you're composing the work. But what is the larger sense of this whole program?
Well, Network is a fantastic organization that presents a number of concerts every season, bringing new music to Philadelphia that probably would otherwise go unheard. They really have a national reputation as an important presenter. Wonderful performers. They draw on some players from the Philadelphia Orchestra, as well as a number of other musicians active in the area. Jan Krizwicki, a composer on mm-hmm. faculty at Temple,
yes.
conducts when a conductor is required. Linda Reichert is the artistic director,
yes.
wonderful pianist, and just a great soul who is a wonderful advocate for composers and has really, you know, I think enriched the cultural life of the city tremendously. This event is really, the concert that we're talking about is part of a series of events happening at the beginning of April. There's a concert on April 4th, that's the one with the folk songs, and then there'll be a concert of John Harbison's music on Sunday, the 6th. Everybody should visit the network's website to get the details.
Tell us a little bit about John Harbison and why he's kind of the subject of much of this program.
John is, like I said earlier, John is really one of the leading American composers. He's 75 now. He, maybe some of our listeners might know of John because of his opera based on The Great Gatsby.
Oh, okay.
That was done at the Met a number of years ago. That's one way in which his name came to prominence. He's composed really a wide variety of pieces. He's been associated with a number of orchestras, a residency with the L.A. Phil. James Levine has really championed his work with the Boston Symphony mm-hmm. as well as at the Met. John also, what's of particular interest here, John has a background in jazz piano. He's a talented jazz pianist himself, pursued jazz very seriously as a young man, and now in later years is exploring that aspect of his musical life, again, more deeply. In fact, as part of the concert on the 4th, John will play jazz piano with Terrell and some musicians from Temple University.
Mm-hmm.
So the jazz angle is being emphasized in that concert.
Is it original music? Do you have any idea?
I think they're probably going to play standards.
Okay.
Blues and standards. I think it's probably going to be, you know, kind of classic American popular song repertoire.
That sounds great. Just great. So then this whole coming together is really showcasing artists and composers. I put that, you know, instrumentalists and composers, mm-hmm. In taking repertoire that exists and reinterpreting it. Is that kind of it?
That's a lot of it. It's repertoire that exists. Really, the April 4th program is the program where that happens, where it's pre-existing material that will be largely familiar to the listener, I think, and it'll just be really intriguing to see how the composers have worked with that material and perhaps cast a fresh light on it. Now, the concert on Sunday is a little different because that's John's composed music based, you know, entirely original material. There's a number of vocal pieces on that concert, mm-hmm. so it'll be interesting to see how he has worked with the poetry of several fine poets. It's all about song, really. Pre-existing okay. folk songs on Friday, and then John's original songs, song settings of poetry on the concert on the 6th, April 6th.
So the old American songs, I guess, is one aspect, and your take on that, is that right?
Right.
And
right.
then the other is already written classical, would you say?
Right, right, in a contemporary classical idiom, right.
Which for the audience is basically, well, the contemporary thing, newer music, I suppose.
Right. Right?
Yeah. And,
right.
And jazz, is jazz separate?
I don't think the jazz aspect will be real explicit in the
okay.
material we'll hear on Sunday. But, you know, these things work their way into the consciousness of the composer even without trying. So I don't know that anybody listening to the concert on Sunday would necessarily know that John had an interest in jazz. But it's there, you know, at some level, even perhaps an unconscious level. When you have the amount of experience and sympathy with jazz thinking that John does, it's going to show up, even though it may not be in a real
explicit
way.
Well, we already had some very new jazz. You know, we went through a period with new jazz, contemporary jazz, which
mm-hmm.
may be dissonant a little bit. I think that's the only thing that was new, kind of, was the tonality, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was,
mm-hmm.
you know, you expected to hear sweet things and in a great rhythm or so on, but contemporary
yeah.
jazz is really cool. I mean, I think it's amazing. And this is really an exciting idea. Would you think you'll be repeating this if it's a success?
I would love to see that happen, you know, but we got to get through this festival.
Okay, well, listen, so I'm waiting to hear Amazing Grace. You've really whet my appetite.
Very good.
Thank you so much, James. Good luck.
Thank you. Okay, Joe.
That's great. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay.
One of the exciting artists participating in this event is jazz trumpeter Terrell Stafford. Here he is performing pianist Billy Strayhorn's tune Smada with Tim Warfield sax, Bruce Bart piano, Peter Washington bass, and Dana Hall on drums. We just heard trumpeter Terrell Stafford performing a Billy Strayhorn tune, Smada, with Tim Warfield on sax, Bruce Bart piano, Peter Washington bass, and Dana Hall on drums. Once again, we are so delighted to have a great guest here on Crossover. Uri Kane, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I have such a collection of things that you have done that I sometimes don't know whether you're playing classical or jazz or both at the same time. And can we clarify for the audience, what is this Network for New Music concert that we're talking about that's going to be taking place?
This concert is part of a larger celebration of the music of John Harbison. And he's a composer who wrote a piece that arranged five or six American classic folk songs in his own way. So the idea of this concert is to commission five or six different composers to each take a song that John Harbison took and write our own variation of it. And in my case, it was I took What a Friend We Have in Jesus.
You're foregoing Bach and Beethoven for that. Is that right this time? Because the last time we spoke, I think you did the Goldberg Variations.
Right. That was a project I did years ago where, again, taking, I guess, a pre-existing form and then sort of rearranging it. In that case, there was a lot of different types of styles and a lot of different types of playing improvisations and arrangements. This is a much shorter piece. We're asked to write a 5-minute piece, and my piece is for piano and violin and clarinet.
As a jazz musician, I mean, how do you approach something like this? It's probably the same way, I guess, as you would approach other classical music. This is, I guess, it's not in the classical vein. Strictly.
Right, but I mean, I guess the idea is that you're sort of writing a variation or an impression or a reharmonization or however you choose to do it is in whatever method of music making you're doing. And then also taking something that people know already what the song is, and it's your version of that.
Well, that's so, kind of what you do with jazz themes as well, right?
Exactly. So it's just you can start from any point and through a process of either composition or improvisation get to another point. And that's what's fun about playing music.
Well, that's what's fun about playing jazz, too, as opposed to classical, because classical is pretty well right there on the page. And the interpretation usually comes, I guess, emotionally and as far as, the loud or the soft or the in and the out, but somehow it's very, very different, I think, with jazz, isn't it?
Well, I think in a lot of jazz and improvised music, it's much more about that aspect of it. So it by its nature, it has a much more open possibilities. But people that are playing Beethoven or Brahms, I mean, there's many ways to inflect what's on the written page and to express what's on the written page. And so maybe the range of dynamics is, it's a smaller one in terms of the clarinet player and the Brahms trio is not going to start improvising in the middle of it.
No, not right now.
Although, why not?
Why not? Yeah, well, at the rate you're going, I think I read somewhere that you were thinking about, was it an opera? Was it perhaps Otello? At one point,
I did a version of Otello, which actually had Philadelphia R&B singer Bunny Sigler.
Oh, my goodness.
And no, we performed that, actually, and I made a recording of it. So,
what made you? Well, it's a very passionate story, but maybe that's what did it, right?
Well, it was also, just working together with Bunny Sigler. And at one point, I had been asked to do some Italian music in Italy. So I thought it would be great. I mean, especially because he's such a dramatic singer, and there's a lot of dramatic singing in the opera, in Verdi's opera. And so basically, we just took different aspects, different parts, different parts of the opera and set them in different ways. Sometimes it sounded more like R&B. Sometimes it sounded like Verdi. But
I see.
We had Italian actors doing it. And you can tell the story in a lot of ways.
Yeah. For this performance, Uri chose the gospel tune, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. Here is the arrangement by John Harbison, performed by the Atlanta Chamber Players. Thank you. We've just heard What a Friend We Have in Jesus, performed by the Atlanta Chamber Players in an arrangement by John Harbison. How about contemporary music, contemporary in the sense of more dissonant and, you know, more adventurous in a way? How do you...
I love that music, and I compose that type of music. And I would say also, you know, growing up in Philadelphia, I had the chance to study with George Rochberg and George Crumb, who were great composers.
Yes.
So I imbibed that music and still write it. I mean, in a way, it's not as prominent, I guess, in terms of sometimes when you're playing certain types of music or you do certain things. But no, I've been pursuing that, and I love that music.
So essentially, though, when you started to play piano, what were you doing? Were you learning classical music? Was this something that you started when you were quite young?
You know, when I was very young, I started taking piano lessons. I was sort of an indifferent student. When I was about 12, I also in Philadelphia met Bernard Pfeiffer, who was a great teacher. He taught a lot of jazz pianists in Philadelphia, and he was, you know, a very sort of strict, inspiring type of mentor. At least that's the way I really fell under him and started to practice a lot harder and started to work on things because I understood how to maybe start to approach the work on them through him.
Well, people often ask, how do you... And, you know, the novice says, well, you just sit down and you improvise, or you just sit down and you do what you feel, which, of course, is impossible in any kind of structured music. But I just wondered with jazz, say, being a classical artist, and you decide that you really would love jazz and you'd like to, I mean, do you study jazz? Are there certain things that one would study?
Absolutely. Well, I think that, you know, first of all, jazz is a very big word. It means a lot of things to different people. And it's constantly being redefined, especially as each generation comes and brings their own thing to it. But I would say that, you know, you listen to what you, if you find something that you love, let's say, you know, you're listening and you hear Herbie Hancock soloing and you say, how does he do that? Then you have to start untangling the whole thing. In other words, it's a question of his touch. It's a question of his harmonic language.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think a lot of it is the harmonic language and style. Also, right.
Style, yeah. Also formally what's happening, rhythmically what's happening, and you start to break things down because mm-hmm. different eras and different periods, there's different emphasis
sure,
on the
of
types
course.
Of music and the music making that's happening. It's also happening for social reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, but you try to, you know, sort of embrace it, and some people transcribe solos. They spend a lot of time trying to imitate the things that they love, and then gradually they come to their own style. And other people, I think, sort of discover a style by working on it and playing. And it's also another element of it. It's usually a collaborative effort. And it's a group effort because
of
that's
course,
what's
yeah.
happening. So all those things have to be worked on. And I think that it, you know, for anybody, there's different degrees of how deeply you want to go into any of these areas. And I think if you're an improviser, you try to get to the point where you can seemingly spontaneously do things that maybe you've practiced or worked on or thought about or played before. And that's the way that develops.
So the new music, though, presents different, when I say new, I guess more contemporary, classical music presents different problems, doesn't it, than the...
Well, there's a lot of complexity in it, let's say, mm-hmm. a lot of rhythmic complexity, a lot of...
Or harmonic, too, I mean, isn't there? I mean, it's different style, really.
Well, it is, although, again, that's constantly changing. I would say that a lot of the contemporary, you know, that's, let's say, music that's been written, especially in the United States in the last 20, 30 mm-hmm. years, a lot of it is much more tonal than it used to be.
Yes.
Right? To mm-hmm. be very forbidden. But in Europe, and let's say in the last 100 years, you know, taking, let's say, from Pierrot Lunaire up to what happened in the 60s and the mm-hmm. 70s, and then things in a way started to break apart in a way. I think that, especially if you're talking about the type of uptown contemporary music,
which is?
Well, people like Milton Babbitt, Charles Warren.
Yeah. Very difficult.
Well, it is, except it not when you listen to it a lot. and sort of understand the rhetoric in the music. Do you know what I mean? It's something that it's, I mean, I'm not, if it's not to your taste, it's not to your taste. But in the sense of, I always found music like that to be really exciting and challenging.
We're speaking with Ori Kane, and we listen now to an excerpt from an album that he did with his trio, the Ori Kane Trio. It's Green Dolphin Street. We just heard Green Dolphin Street from his album Siren, Ori Kane performing with his trio. Whatever you're doing is fascinating, and we're kind of breathlessly awaiting the next big jump that you're going to make. I wonder, where do you have to go? Where do you go next?
How can I answer that?
I don't know. It's a kind of a silly question.
But I can tell you one thing that is happening in Philadelphia in July that I'm a part of, which is the celebrations of Octavius Caddo.
Okay.
And I'm writing a piece for the Philadelphia Orchestra and choirs, celebrating the story of a Philadelphia civil rights leader who was murdered in 1871 in Philadelphia.
Oh, my.
And a wonderful book was written by two gentlemen from Philadelphia Inquirer about the history of Philadelphia during that time and his story.
Yes.
Octavius Caddo. So now they're having celebrations this year with many different events and schools. But this is going to be a concert at the Mann Music Center on July 19th.
Oh, how wonderful.
And
July 19th.
So that's 19th. What I'm working.
Oh, that's terrific. So it's music you've composed?
Music that I've composed. I mean, I was very influenced by this history book, so I took 9 or 10 different parts of his life. He was a remarkable guy. He also started a baseball team that played the Philadelphia, I mean, what was the Philadelphia Athletics back in that time.
What year was this you're talking
about?
That
was in the 1860s, 1870s. He was I think he was murdered in 1871, but his... he also helped get the amendments passed that freed slaves and gave civil rights, supposedly, to everybody in the country. But he was somebody who also was an educator, and the students, I think his school became the precursor of Cheney University now.
I
so
see.
He's
mm-hmm.
an important person who... so anyway, the chapters of his life, some of them are with choir, singing mm-hmm. more gospel-infused music, because that's probably what it's going to be. The concert will be other pieces like that, but also pieces for piano and orchestra that are actually the more turbulent parts, you know, the murder.
But again, the subject is just him and his murder and what he contributed to the civil rights movement. Kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's July 19th. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. What is there to say? Just bravo. And I know you're always exploring. And I think that that's certainly not only is it exciting, but it's refreshing, too, because you kind of discover parts of you that you didn't know existed and the things that are brought to life in searching. And I guess that's also part of improvisation. So I thank you so very, very much, Ori.
Thank
wonderful
you.
To speak to you. And good luck on this wonderful concert.
Okay. Thank you
Thanks.
So much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We've been speaking with artist and pianist Ori Kane and composer James Primosh about the Network for New Music event honoring composer John Harbison, with workshops and performances being held at Temple University on April 4th through the 6th. For further information about attendance, call 215-848-7647 or networkfornewmusic.org. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Patti, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.